You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, April 8th, 2015, and it's got to be 420. Somewhere in the world, everywhere in the world, if you can hear my voice, it's now 420. Even if you're listening on podcast, whatever, we're pretty flexible when it comes to our 420 schedules here. We got 2 hours of the best, most comprehensive news show on marijuana reform throughout the internet. This is the Russ Melville Show. Thank you for joining us. We're available on iTunes and Stitcher if you want to get us on a podcast. You want to take us on the go, you can listen on the TuneIn Radio app. You can download that for iPhone or for Android. iPhone and Android. That's right. But we've got the 420 Radio app coming out this 420 weekend in Denver. So you'll want to get that downloaded once we have the opportunity. It's going to be an amazing app. You'll get the 420 Radio live stream, and in future editions, you'll be able to bookmark the shows that you like, and they will automatically podcast download for you within the app. So we got that coming up. We've got more music channels. The 420 Radio app will contain multiple channels for the VIP listeners, and you can get an all Roots Monday channel and all Groovin' Thursday channel, whatever type of music you like, or listen to what will become the new 710 channel, which will just be all random music. We got so many cool things coming up in that 420 Radio app, so I hope you get that downloaded as soon as it's available. If you follow me at Radical Russ, or just follow our network at 420radio.org, we'll tweet out the links just as soon as it's available. Yes, we are getting ready for the Cannabis Cup in Denver, and that means tomorrow and Friday we'll have no live shows, but I will have some reports from the road for you. I'll be recording and uploading what I can for you, and we'll play that during the regularly scheduled show times. I'm driving. I'm road tripping all by myself. I just got notice from Wiz Calico. He can't make it with me. So I am driving all by myself across Idaho and Wyoming to make my way to Denver, Colorado. I'll be there for the entire week prior to the 420 weekend. Going to do some live remotes and going to collect some more coverage of some of the amazing cannabis industry that's going on out there. Hopefully meet a few of our cannabis celebrities and movers and shakers in the marijuana industry out there, and bring you all of that on next week's editions of the Russ Melville Show. And then, of course, there's the Cannabis Cup itself. I'll be filming video interviews and some features there of the booths and all the other goings on at the Cannabis Cup. Those will be uploaded to the Radical Russ YouTube channel. We're only doing videos for special events from now on. There's just too much storage and expense and hassle and time it takes to do videos for every show. So every show is just going to be podcast from now on. By the way, if you check out 420radio.org, we got some new menu links and links for the podcast subscription. Should be easier for those of you seeking the podcast, including the podcast link for Toker Talk Radio. I finally got it worked out where you can actually subscribe to Toker Talk Radio through iTunes or through any of your podcast aggregators, but you will need a VIP account. So get yourself a VIP account at 420radio.org/VIP, and then you'll find all of the show links within the 420radio.org website. Now, coming up on the show today, it's Hemp Day Hump Day, so Doug Fine will be calling in with an update on what's the latest in industrial hemp. I've got a radical rant about that terrible murder that just took place in South Carolina of Walter Scott. In the Drug War Data Mines, we're going to take a look at how legalization's impacting the Mexican cartels. And in Behind the Headlines, an Oregon state senator proposes letting medical dispensaries sell weed starting July 1st to all adults. But all that's coming up right after the 420 Radio headline news. That's up next, right after these sponsor messages. And then stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio.
You're tuned into the Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization. Are you tired of storing your herb in back alley baggies? Then keep your herb fresh and protected with Pottles. Pottles are airtight and odor-free, not to mention they're reusable, BPA-free, and UV-resistant. Pottles come in a variety of sizes, styles, and colors, so go check out Pottles at mypottles.com. Use the code STASH to get an additional 10% off. Again, that's mypottles.com, mypottles.com, and tell them Radical Russ sent ya.
I like funky music, baby.
This is Big Daddy, and I want you to check out my show, The Funky Roller Ring, right here on 420 Radio, because we love us some funky music.
Funky Roller Ring.
I like it like that.
Support for 420 Radio comes from Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies, a guide to gardening with nature, authored by Kip Zonderkopf. Based on the ethos that a living soil is the foundation of a thriving garden, Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies is your guide to naturally growing resinous buds and nutrient-rich veggies. Get the ebook now with instant download at kickassorganics.com. Previews available on Amazon, iTunes, Nook, Google Play, Kobo, and many other online retailers. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, April 8th, 2015. In the general city election last night, Wichita voters said yes to reducing penalties for possession of marijuana. Of the 37,000 Wichita voters, 54% said they wanted more lenient penalties for first-time offenders. Violations would be an infraction that wouldn't have to be disclosed on most job and college scholarship applications. Attorney General Derek Schmidt has issued an opinion that the initiative is unlawful, primarily because it conflicts with Kansas state law. Representative Steve Bronk, a Republican from Wichita, said he is concerned that Wichita residents might think they are protected by the city initiative and would only have to pay a $50 fine. But under state law, first-time marijuana possession is a Class A misdemeanor, carrying a penalty of as much as a $2,500 fine and a year in jail. Legally, that puts it on par with violent offenses, including assaulting a police officer. Wichita police make 1,800 to 1,900 marijuana arrests per year. Pasadena police raided a prominent medical marijuana lab in Southern California, the Workshop, Monday evening. According to reports, Pasadena police raided the Workshop in Pasadena at 10 p.m. Monday night, detaining 28 people and ultimately arresting two on suspicion of manufacturing a controlled substance. The Workshop is a leading cannabis analysis laboratory in Southern California and performs potency and pathogen testing on Southland medical cannabis for dispensaries, collectives, and patients. According to reports, an anonymous tip about cannabis odor led local police to two Workshop sites in Pasadena. Police said they seized 200 pint-sized bottles of hash oil, 500 pounds of marijuana, and found a manufacturing factory for hash oil or honey oil. The legality of extraction labs hinges on a California appellate court ruling which criminalizes cannabis extraction using butane, but allows for extraction using inflammable solvents like water. Seattle's first legal marijuana grow operation erupted in flames early this morning, and about 3,000 pot plants perished in the blaze. The two-alarm fire gutted Sea of Green Farms about 4 a.m. after an electrical wiring problem, the Seattle Fire Department said. It was controlled about 45 minutes later. There were no reported injuries. Firefighters, who wore standard masks to battle the blaze, were not affected by the marijuana fumes, Seattle Fire Department spokesman Kyle Moore told the Seattle Times. Quote, the building is ventilated upward, so all the smoke went up into the air, end quote, he said. The Seattle City Attorney's Office sued the grower last summer, claiming the company failed to comply with city building code. The suit was dismissed once Sea of Green got the proper land use designation. The fire caused about $250,000 in damages to the building and equipment, not including the lost marijuana products, a fire department spokesperson said. The Republican-backed effort to legalize marijuana for limited medicinal purposes in Tennessee is officially dead for the year. The Senate Health and Welfare Committee decided to delay action on the proposal from Nashville GOP Senator Steve Dickerson until 2016. Chairman Rusty Crowe said there wasn't enough time to fully discuss the pros and cons of the bill. House Speaker Beth Harwell, a Republican of Nashville, recently touted aspects of the bill but said it needed more work before it could become law. Senator Mark Green, a Clarksville Republican and doctor, also said he supports the general idea but said the bill needs some work. Nobody specified what work they wanted to see done on the bill. The bill was officially sent to summer study by a 7-2 vote. A bill that would allow parents to use cannabidiol oil to treat their kids' seizures now sits on the Idaho governor's desk awaiting his signature, but no one is sure that the governor will sign it. Many in the statehouse, including some on the governor's staff, have voiced concerns that there's not enough medical science behind the bill and that it essentially legalizes marijuana, or at the very least, they say, it opens the door for legalization in the future. Meanwhile, a bill to legalize the use of cannabidiol is heading to a vote of the full Oklahoma Senate after being unanimously approved in the Senate Health and Human Services Committee yesterday by a vote of 9-0. The bill passed in the House by a vote of 99-2 earlier this year. State Representative John Eccles, a Republican of Oklahoma City, emphasizes the bill is not an attempt to legalize marijuana, but an effort to help his niece and other children in the state who suffer from a variety of debilitating types of epilepsy. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, April 8th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville. You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
NARML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com. Welcome back, everyone. 13 and a half after the hour. Time for us to go behind the headlines. We're here in the state of Oregon. We are looking forward to the implementation of our marijuana legalization. According to our Measure 91 ballot initiative that passed with 56.1% of the vote, marijuana becomes legal to possess and cultivate at home this July 1st, 2015. The only problem is the licensing procedure for the pot shops at which you could buy your legal weed doesn't even begin until January 1st of 2016. And then the time it will take to get the grows licensed, get the first harvest in, get the shops licensed, and all of that, the proposal now, the ETA that has been proposed, is somewhere around September or October of 2016. So this, of course, presents the problem of marijuana being legal this July, but nowhere to get it until next July or later, probably later. So stepping into the breach is a man who is giving me renewed hope in the Republican Party here in the state of Oregon, Senator Ted Farrioli. He's a Republican from John Day. He's also the Senate Minority Leader. He was the one that we featured in a clip a couple of days back, blasting the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and its inability, in his opinion, to handle the task of getting marijuana regulated. Now he's issued another bombshell here. He is working on legislation that would allow the existing medical marijuana dispensaries to temporarily serve recreational customers and collect sales taxes, or collect the taxes. They're not sales taxes. Allowing to collect the taxes allowed under the law there. Excise taxes. Thank you. God, my brain wish wouldn't come up with the word. This is quite a development. Now, it stands to logical reason. It's like, hey, it's legal July 1st. People are going to want to have a place to buy it. We already have these places that are licensed by the health authority to sell weed to sick people. Why not just let them sell weed to healthy people as well? Now, a lot of people are applauding this move for the common sense nature of it. Farrioli says the state needs an interim solution for the consumers. He said, quote, Oregonians are not expecting to have to wait until 2016 to be able to buy retail legal marijuana in Oregon. These growers are out there. They've got products. And Farrioli says he's discussed the idea with dispensary owners and other leaders on the legislative committee and, quote, everybody thinks it's a brilliant idea, end quote. Ginny Burdick, who's one of the co-chairs of the Joint Committee on Implementing Measure 91, said the committee members are very interested in that idea. Now, I think it's a great idea. I don't see why there should be separate buildings to serve healthy or sick people in the first place. But I wonder if a lot of the people supporting this are thinking it through, thinking through what the effect will be. So imagine that on July 1st, any adult can go to any medical marijuana dispensary and begin purchasing marijuana. Already on my street, like the main boulevard I live on is Sandy Boulevard here in Oregon, in Portland. And there are, well, now there's 5 pot shops if I drive toward the city, because there's a new one opening up even within walking distance of me. So at least 5 if I go that direction, another 3 or 4 if I go the other direction out of town. So 9 or 10 on this one boulevard. And there's some other boulevards where they got a similar situation. There's, you know, many of these medical marijuana dispensaries that exist. If on July 1st, me and all the other people age 21 and older can go shop there, we're going to love that. That's going to be great. We're going to flock to those dispensaries. They're going to do business like they've never done business before. But what happens once the pot shop licensing starts happening? What happens once we start getting toward July of next year, August and September of next year, when they're expecting these licenses to be given out? If your local dispensary doesn't switch over to being a pot shop or apply to be a pot shop, or if it isn't given the ability to become a pot shop, because there's some talk about not letting these places co-locate, you might end up with a situation where for a year, consumers have gotten used to shopping at these medical marijuana dispensaries and then suddenly being told, as of this date, now this place is just a dispensary again and you can't shop there. It's medical only now and you can't shop there. Do you think a lot of consumers are going to want that sort of situation where they've been allowed to shop someplace and get used to it for a year and then suddenly can't shop there when the recreational shops come up? Now, I think practically what will happen is a lot of these dispensaries will want to be recreational shops because as they're temporarily selling this medicine, this marijuana, I should say, to healthy people, they're going to love the money coming in. They're going to love all the profits they get from that. They're not going to want to give that up and go back to being just medical only and cut out so many of those customers. In a sense, what Senator Farrioli is offering here is kind of a sneaky way of undoing the idea of separate medical and recreational facilities. It's already tough enough to justify that there should be 2 separate buildings selling the exact same product based on the types of customers that are coming into it. But after we've had a year of these supposedly medical-only shops selling to both types of customers, it's going to be even harder to justify splitting them back up again. So it's crazy like a fox, and for some very shrewd politicking, if indeed that is Senator Farioli's goal, to eliminate the separate buildings for medical or recreational. I just don't think a lot of the people who want to keep those buildings separate are fully thinking through the implications of what this so-called temporary move would actually accomplish.
Sorry, I picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
All right, folks, it's 4:20 in the Mountain Time Zone where I am headed. I'm headed to Denver, Colorado, starting tomorrow morning. I'll be on Idaho time tomorrow night visiting my folks. So I better get used to doing 4:20 an hour early. Who am I kidding? I've always done 4:20 an hour early. So have you. Join me. We'll be right back after this. Drug war data mining. Legalization's hurting the Mexican cartels.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Oh man, I really dig this tune. You should really check out this groove.
Cool.
Hey, check out more deep cuts like this on my show, Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, every Thursday night on 420 Radio.
Funky Roller Rink.
Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you are looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and use promo code 420radio to get 10% off your online purchase, or just give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby!
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour. In the Drug War Data Mines today, we're going to take a look at data coming from the country of Mexico, where our drug war has led to tens of thousands of deaths due to them fighting over the trafficking routes and control of what are our drug markets, among other things. And this violence and this profit by these cartels has been affected by our efforts to legalize marijuana. It's something that we have said throughout all of the campaigns to legalize marijuana state by state, and that is, legalizing marijuana takes this business out of the hands of the Mexican cartels. Now, our opponents, for the longest time, have tried to puncture that talking point by saying, oh, the Mexican cartels don't get that much money from marijuana. It's not that big a percentage of what they do. They traffic meth and heroin, and they do human trafficking and kidnapping and extortion and yada, 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 which is all true. But it still begs the question, why would you want to give those kind of people the marijuana business if they're these awful human traffickers, sex traffickers, child traffickers? They're the ones you want running the marijuana business. And regardless of what percentage it might be of the Mexican cartel's business, why give them any of it? Why benefit them at all? Now, we've always thrown around various numbers on how much the impact might be. And these had all been through projections and studies. Rand Corporation came up with one, for example. But now that we've had legalization in Washington and Colorado for a couple of years, we're starting to get some data trickling in on what the impact actually has been in some hard and fast numbers. From the U.S. Border Patrol, they tell us that in 2011, they seized 2.5 million pounds of marijuana from Mexico. 2.5 million pounds. In 2014, that's down to 1.9 million pounds. A quick back-of-the-envelope calculation tells me that's what? Over a 20% decline since the past 3 years as marijuana has become legalized in just two states. Just two states has caused an over 20% decline in the seizures in Mexico. And the army in Mexico has noted an even steeper decline. They confiscated 664 tons of cannabis in 2014. That's a 32% drop in just 1 year. Almost a third less Mexican marijuana has been confiscated by their army than the year before. And it's not that they're seeking it out less or working less hard or they got their budgets dropped or anything like that. It appears to be everything to do with marijuana legalization in the United States. Colorado and Washington State in 2012, and now Alaska, Oregon, and District of Columbia. These numbers can also be seen in the industry that's growing, the legal industry that is growing in America. According to the ArcView Group, the legal marijuana industry grew to $2.7 billion. That's growth of 74% from the year prior. This includes revenue from both recreational marijuana and medical marijuana. And ArcView predicts that the industry will top $4 billion by next year. That's $4 billion in industry that is not benefiting the Mexican cartels. And we hear it in anecdotes from the farmers themselves. Numerous stories have pointed out how Mexican farmers are giving up planting cannabis. One of them talked about how he would get $100 a kilo for whatever he would plant, and now the cartels are only paying him $25 a kilo. It's not worth it for them anymore to be growing marijuana. Our opponents will seize on this, saying, aha, but the cartels are now switching their tactics. These growers are now switching to heroin. Switching to heroin, and the cartels are switching to more kidnapping and drugs and methamphetamine and so forth. And they can switch all they like. They have to switch. They have to diversify. And it's no surprise that they do. They're criminals. Criminals do crime. That's what they do. So it's no surprise that they're trying to diversify their portfolio. The question is, who will they sell it to? In America, we have 20 million regular marijuana consumers of adult age. In America, we have maybe 2 million drug addicts of all other drugs combined. The illicit ones, I should say, not the prescription ones. So even if they were able to completely capture the U.S. cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine markets, they'd still be a 10-to-1 loss in the number of people they can sell it to. Also understand that there's a whole different economy involved with those types of drugs as compared with marijuana. So the idea that they're going to just make up for their lost sales in marijuana by doing more kidnappings or selling more meth just doesn't work out. The math just isn't there. There is no doubt that the legalization of marijuana in the United States is having a devastating effect on these Mexican drug trafficking organizations. And probably the best effect, their annual murders peaked in 2011 at about 15,000, and they've been dropping steadily ever since. Lives are being saved through legalization.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the Ustream video app for Android and iPhone. Go to rad-r.us/420Ustream or just click the Ustream app icon for Android or iPhone below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof.
Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. Marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
Welcome back at 1:31 after the hour. We're reaching out to Doug Fine out there in the Goat Ranch in New Mexico. We're trying to catch him by cell phone, so we'll see if we can make the connection. Doug Fine, of course, is the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail. And I should make mention that our next Portland Normal meeting here in Portland, Oregon, will be on April 25th. And joining us will be Joy Beckerman Marr from Hemp Ace International. She's a world-renowned expert on industrial hemp, and she'll be giving a presentation to our membership on all the latest developments on industrial hemp building techniques, specifically the use of hempcrete in creating buildings and insulation for buildings. So it'll be an interesting demonstration. You can learn more by visiting our Portland Normal Facebook or going to PortlandNormal.org on the web. And I'm afraid it looks like we're not going to get Doug Fine on the line for today's Hemp Day Hump Day. He might be traveling or something. Gave him a reminder last week. Here we go. It looks like he's calling in. It may have just had the phone away from him. Doug, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, I'm so glad we got you.
Thanks for your patience with me. It was a technical issue.
Oh, I totally understand. And, you know, the fact that you can be on with us live from a goat farm, that's a technological success story in and of itself.
Definitely. We're living a good time.
That sure is. Now, Doug, tell us what's going on. What's the latest in industrial hemp these days?
It's the most exciting time in hemp in, it's hard to say, you know, I'm tempted to say 12,000 years, but certainly in 100 years. The situation in every state is evolving by the day. I'm working on projects in Kentucky and Oregon, and again, changing by the day on all ends, but it looks like they're, you know, the season's going to be able to come off, farmers are going to be able to get some seed, and we'll get planted. Oregon, the seed situation went from terrifying and dire to potentially okay, as it does in Kentucky, but Oregon is still sitting and waiting on a lot of last-minute permitting details that are going to determine how significant the season's going to be. If I was giving a best-case projection, and that's the only thing that's acceptable to me for Oregon or anything, but as it looks in Oregon, is farmers may be able to get everyone who wants to sign up for this program and does it very quickly and pays close attention to the daily developments has a chance to cultivate 10 acres, up to 10 acres. Now, that's not enough for all the research we need into things like biomass and whatnot, but it was a hard and long-discussed issue surrounding what's possible from the various agencies that are around on this short notice. And those agencies, Russ, I have to say, are working so hard here in Oregon to try to make it work. So I'm cautiously optimistic we'll have a really decent first year, a better first year than any other state has had by a pretty good long shot.
All right. We are looking forward to that.
Maybe 100, 200 acres in Oregon.
No doubt. So the question we have for the chat room is that the hemp farmers have their seeds in the ground now, right?
Some hemp farmers do have their seeds in the ground now, and that's a good and important thing for various agronomic reasons. But what I'm working on is a very specific thing. It is importing seeds in that past months are under this very temporary gray area in which we're dwelling now. That has to do with federal legalization for research purposes. This is working to get doing everything possible to get a check off so that there will be, like I say, up to 10 acres per Oregon permittee if all goes well. That's completely smiled on by all agencies, but those farmers who are, and this is from the words of ODA folks, again, who are doing such a great job, those farmers that are ODA permittees and have hemp seed that is 0.3% less or less of THC, can plant, and as you say, I believe several have planted, and that you're totally in sync with probably with all, definitely all law, but certainly state law. What I'm going for is documenting the seed chain process, and that's important for a couple of reasons. One is just, you know, I think it's important to do your best to follow all laws, federal and state law. But secondly, for the kind of paper trail that you want to create if you're developing cultivars, which is what we need, we need to show what we have, where it's from, who the seller was, and start that seed rebuilding process.
All right. Well, that's good news, and we're very excited to see the first harvest happen. And once we get to those harvests, the next step would be how we're going to process that hemp. What's the status of all the processing that we'll need to be able to do for this?
Tons of exciting and positive news there. I'm confident on that. We get the seed in the ground, we can tackle that next issue. It's what I plan on spending a lot of my energy doing as I work on several hemp farms on both coasts this year and learn the agricultural side of it. I'm working on that kind of thing. I just today was in communication with a potential source of, for instance, a nice medium-sized hemp harvester. There's also already seed oil processing facilities in a number of places in Oregon that's dialed in. And then some other exciting news is that in the last 2 weeks, I've been able to hear about some really cool projects coming to Oregon because I've keynoted both the Oregon Hemp Convention and the Milco Hemp Expo in Loveland, Colorado. And in both of those places, hemp entrepreneurs spoke about bringing various kinds of fiber processing facilities to Oregon. So they're looking for high amount of biomass. And that's why it was difficult for me personally as I was negotiating with various folks to try to make this year's season work on all levels, especially the seed import. It was very, very hard for me to agree to any kind of acreage limit for farmers. For one thing, the legislation allows unlimited acreage, the state legislation. But for another thing, we genuinely need big biomass research to feed these facilities that are thinking about coming for processing. It's really genuinely stifling the industry to make that kind of limitation on acreage. But in the end, as I say, it's bigger by several fold than the amount of acreage that Kentucky planted in their famous first legal harvest last year. So it would be frustrating to have to wait a year for large amounts of biomass, but it would be far, far better than nothing. And they were able to do biomass research on just 2-acre farms in Colorado last year, including into next generation nanotechnology, battery materials made out of hemp fiber, that kind of thing. And speaking of first legal harvest routes, I have to mention that at the NOCO Hemp Expo last week was the release party for my new 25% hemp printed piece of writing, a 28-page monograph called First Legal Harvest. And it was incredible to hold it. The paper's strong, feels great, looks great, the photos are all crisp, and had a blast releasing that. That's available on, through my website now.
Right on. So people can get that at dougfine.com?
That's it, yep.
Right on. All right, so the other question that's still hanging in the air is what the regulations might be as far as locating farms or whether there will be any agricultural districts, specifically the concern of the medical growers in Southern Oregon who fear cross-pollination with hemp plants. Is there any sort of regulations in that respect, with respect to zoning, that are coming down the pipe?
I wouldn't say the word regulations, but there's been a great amount of progress on that front. First of all, the first important things I have to say before I even talk about this is I'm part of this tribe. I'm part of the people that are feeling that sustainable cannabis grown under God's sun being brought back into the above ground economy is really good for that economy, but it's also good for things like public safety and health. If you're the type of person that eats, you know, only organic food that you grow or get at a food co-op or a CSA whenever possible, then you're obviously going to want your cannabis to be grown with that type of mentality. So therefore, and that's what I spent years of my life researching, and, you know, I'm members of growers organizations, that kind of thing. Even though I myself don't cultivate, this is a field of journalism that I cover and is very, very important to me. And so for me, this is a family discussion, and it's not one type of plant versus the other. And the other thing is that personally, I think that the way to resolve any questions that any new industry has is through communication, and that's started. As we've discussed on the show before, process is very important to me. It's important to me that the argument that I've been making passionately for a decade, that not only will economy and public safety increase with cannabis, but society is going to improve in part because the people that are involved with this longest utilized of humanity's plants have learned something from it and deal with something that's different than what you might call the monoculture, a hedge fund, you know, don't think of the earth as a system mentality that's got us into our ecological mess. And I've got, you know, a family and I care about the future. So there's no industry in any field I can ever talk about wherever without talking about sustainability and all that. So we who care about the cannabis plant, whether or not you're choosing to call it hemp in this ridiculous and arbitrary 0.3% limit that we deal at, temporary limit that we deal with today, or you want to call it cannabis. Some, you know, I tend to say psychoactive cannabis just because it's the kind of cannabis that people will ingest. And so, you know, whichever so-called side of this you want, this is one plant and we're all in this together. It benefits everybody for us all to work together and play nicely and take into considerations, take into everyone's concerns and resolve it in a way that proves to everybody that we can all coexist in this vast market that's approaching.
All right. Well said. All right. We got about a minute left here, Doug. I want to make sure if people want to get a chance to meet you or get one of their books signed, you are all over the country. What's the next couple of events you're headed to?
Thanks for asking. It's such a whirlwind now as we approach planting season in multiple projects. I think I may have something shaping up for 420 in Colorado, but the bottom line is I'm going to be bouncing between Oregon and Kentucky with two different hemp projects. The one in Kentucky I'll talk a little bit about now because I haven't talked about it so much yet. It's really trying to put the tri-cropping concept that I wrote about in Hemp Bound, which came out before here, this first legal harvest hemp-printed project we just talked about. And Hemp Bound provides a model that I now call tri-cropping that allows for value-added processing in communities so that farming communities can make comfortable livings and will rise from our pitiful 1% of Americans that live off the land today to at least 1937 prohibition years, 30%, if not Thomas Jefferson's 90%, real livings through value-added and vertical control of the industry that makes a community not so much worried about Wall Street's vicissitudes, but able to live a progressive capitalistic life that's good for their communities and good for their bank accounts, good for the earth, good for the customer, et cetera, patient, whatever. So we're trying to implement that in Kentucky project this year. I'm very, very excited to see the incredibly fast real world manifestation. Last week, again, at the Northern Colorado Hemp Expo, a great cannabis hemp supporter, Representative Jared Polis, came in as I was emceeing, and I dumped some organic hemp seed in his hands, and we donned that together. I was in a hemp raincoat, he's in a hemp blazer, and just asking all of us to take a moment to appreciate the fact that we are approaching the promised land in victory, and let's cross the finish line in unity.
All right. Sounds good. Doug Fine. You can learn more at DougFine.com. Follow him on Twitter at Organic Cowboy. Pick up your copies of Too High to Fail and Hemp Bound on Amazon and other great book retailers. Talk to you in a couple of weeks, Doug, and happy Hemp Day to you.
Happy Hemp Day, Russ. Thanks.
All right, when we come back, time for a radical rant. The Walter Scott murder, was it drug related? Not officially, but in the long view of things, yes. We'll explain why right after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Jive, Mary, Grifo, Grass, Hay. Technically, it's Cannabis sativa, the common name, marijuana. She has found a crutch to see her through her difficulties instead of facing up to them and coping with them. And in time, she may be ready to try something different, something better.
Gateway theory doesn't work. Maybe. It's a reality.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 47 after the hour, and I don't know if you caught this video yesterday, but if you saw the news in any capacity, you probably did. It's the terrible, terrible eyewitness video of a police officer, Michael Slagle, in South Carolina, shooting down an unarmed black man who was running away from him. An unarmed black man who went by the name of Walter Scott, who passed away, victim of those cops' bullets, while that cop and another cop stood around and did no sort of CPR or resuscitation. And if it were not for this video that we've received, the New York Times has posted, and by the way, the person who filmed the video will be on the NBC Nightly News tonight with Lester Holt, if you want to get his take on this. If it were not for the video, this would just be another he said case where one of the he saids is dead. In fact, the news reports that came out immediately after the shooting hewed to a pretty common script that we've heard in these officer-involved shootings. There was somebody pulled over. The man and the cop got into a scuffle. The man tried to grab the cop's taser. The cop felt frightened for his life, and so he discharged his weapon and killed the man. That's the standard script we've heard in so many of these shootings of unarmed black men. There's been a rash of unarmed black men who attack cops and try to steal their tasers. Well, thanks to this videotape, we know that that is not what happened. It's exactly what the cop said happened. It's what his lawyer said would happen. It's what the police union would have come out and said happened. And it would have ended up with no indictments. It would have ended up with this cop walking. It would have ended up with no justice for the family of Walter Scott, if not for this video, which shows clearly that while there might have been a scuffle at the beginning, at the very beginning of the video, it looks as if the two are kind of engaged somehow. But from that point on, Walter Scott ran away. And that police officer calmly took out his weapon, didn't even really get into a crouch or anything. There was no fear in this man's heart whatsoever. Calmly popped off 7 shots and then a final 8th shot to a suspect who was 15, 20, 25 feet away in the back. Clear murder. And what did that cop do? That cop, even though he could kind of see there was someone filming him, that cop picked up his taser from where the two had their initial scuffle, walked it over and dropped it beside the dying body, the dying handcuffed body of Walter Scott, to corroborate the story that he knew he would already tell. Makes you think maybe these cops get some sort of training on this, doesn't it? Whatever you do, make sure you have the taser dropped somewhere near the body, or else your story won't hold. This is yet another travesty and yet another indictment of the Ku Klux Klan. This is another clear indication of the systemic racism in our law enforcement and judicial system. If not for that videotape, this would have just been another hashtag campaign. Another series of protests that Black Lives Matter, hands up, don't shoot. Hell, back turned, don't shoot. And this cop is charged with murder because finally we have a videotape that they can't dance around, that they can't explain away. Finally, we have the perfect videotape to show what so many black people have told us happens in their neighborhoods with chillingly recurring basis. And this killing of Walter Scott, to me, can trace its direct cause to the racism that is fostered by this war on drugs. That this war on drugs is racist in its roots and racist in its agenda couldn't be more clear. Any student of history can show you how drug use in America wasn't really a problem. Drug use in America was pretty much accepted until it was the Chinese on the West Coast with their opium dens, until it was the hashish parlors frequented by the Negroes in the East Coast, until it was those jazz musicians smoking reefers in New Orleans and Chicago and Memphis, until it was the Mexican laborers smoking their marijuana coming north to take her jobs. They're coming to take her jobs! The racism of this drug war was a direct response to our country finally accepting that you couldn't just go and lynch black guys. It just wasn't acceptable to go string up black guys up on a tree, or Chinese guys, or Mexican guys. A lot of people forget that there is a history of lynching of Chinese Americans in this country too, and of Mexican Americans. We forget about that, but most lynching, everyone thinks of the blacks in the South, but that's not all the sordid history of lynching in this country. So when it became politically incorrect to engage in lynching, those who still wanted to maintain this racial superiority needed to have some way of maintaining it. And the drug laws became that way. We've learned how Harry J. Anslinger could turn a blind eye to people like Judy Garland or Joe McCarthy. White drug addicts were just fine. They were just sick people. They just needed some help. But a black drug addict like Billie Holiday had to be stalked and imprisoned and tortured to death. And we continue to see it today in the statistics of the drug war policing, how blacks are 4 times more likely to be arrested, 11 times more likely to be convicted, etc., etc. And we see it even as we legalize marijuana in Colorado and Washington. The few remaining arrests for marijuana are still disproportionately racist. the public consumption tickets are still disproportionately racist. And this drug war creates a feedback loop of racism. Anything that's prohibited, anything that's a criminal market, is going to attract people who have nothing to lose. It's going to attract the people who can afford the risk. Someone who's got a lot of opportunities in life might not be as likely to want to be a weed dealer. But a kid growing up in the cities, a black kid growing up in the cities where black unemployment tops 20 or 30 or 40%, more if you're young, where there are no viable economic opportunities, is much more likely to turn to a life of crime. And in choosing a life of crime, might want to choose the ones that are the least harmful, and that would be, in a lot of respects, dealing weed. And so we set up this system where the poor and disadvantaged are most likely to join that system, join that criminal side, join that criminal element. Then we deploy the drug war cops after them, and they begin to associate those neighborhoods and those people with criminality. Not with the poverty and the hardship that leads them to the criminality, not understanding that there's a reason why there's white suburban kids driving their nice cars into the inner city to make a deal, pick up something from the black kids that are dealing on the street. They don't look at the underlying reason. They just understand that every time I pick up a black kid in the inner city, he's got weed on him. Every time I go after some criminal, there's weed involved somewhere. And these cops begin to associate drugs, violence, and blackness as one thing, as one entity. The drug war creates the usual suspects. And the drug war dehumanizes those suspects. They're no longer people. They're druggies. They're dealers. They're junkies. Whatever dehumanizing term we can apply to them. And it brings it to a point where a cop doesn't feel any compunction about planting weed on a suspect or dropping the taser near the body or shooting the unarmed suspect. Because when there's drugs involved, there's always the easy excuse. He was drugged up. He was high. I was in fear for my life. It was a bad neighborhood. It was a high crime neighborhood. You know how all these drug deals can go bad in a moment's notice. And that mentality infects our police departments to the point where they don't see the citizens out there as people they are to protect and serve, but they are enemies. They are opponents. They are all potential suspects ready to be arrested. Now, the case specifically of Walter Scott had nothing to do with drugs. Walter Scott had had some problems with child custody and making child support payments. He'd been in front of a court two or three times on that. But nothing that I could see in his sheet there that had anything to do with drugs. But regardless, all of these cases of profiling of African Americans have their roots in this drug war that made it so easy to see an entire class of people, an entire community, as criminals first, citizens second. The default position for cops these days is to assume that the black folks are up to no good until proven otherwise. And until we end this war on drugs, we can't begin to ameliorate the institutional racism. The war on drugs is the mechanism that allows this institutional racism to foster and flourish. Ending the war on drugs is the first step toward eradicating that cancer. All right, folks, that's all the time we got for this first hour, but stay tuned. Hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We're going to talk a little bit about the congressmen who are rebuking the Department of Justice over their continued prosecution of medical marijuana in the states. A look at the death of Leonard Nimoy and what relation that might have to marijuana. Gordon Green's got some daily Toker tunes for us for Ivy Wednesday. We're going to talk about race in the marijuana industry
and plenty more. So stick around. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you